Hello, Geek Speak listeners.
Hello, I'm Matt McRae from Roaring Fork Help Desk.
And my name is Raleigh Burley from KD&K, your news director filling in for Louis Gerardo, who is at the bridge scene today.
Yeah, as well as Marty Reinerson. They're both at the bridge opening this afternoon.
As well as Amy Haddon Marsh. So we've got a whole KD&K party at the ribbon cutting ceremony, and we are anticipating a call from them. We'll put them on live so you can hear the fun action going on at the bridge today.
Yeah, doesn't look like there's anything going on yet. I'm on the I just googled Grand Avenue Bridge Project, went to the let's see here, co.gov, and they have a the live webcam from the Colorado Mountain College from CMC. Mm-hmm. So at some point, I think they're going to walk. There's going to be a bunch of people walking across the bridge. But right now, there's nothing going on. There's a large flag flying on one of the cranes, and not too much going on at the moment. So
yes, I believe they're going to take a historic photo of everybody on top of the deck of the new bridge. Sounds like a lot of fun.
Awesome.
And you were just telling me a tidbit of news about Comcast today.
Yeah. So I got a. So I noticed that I was doing some updates on my equipment in my house, and then all of a sudden things started acting very strangely. And so I was like, well, okay, now I need to reboot all my equipment. And then nothing happened. Well, something happened, but I was able to get to some websites and not get to others. And then shortly after that, I got an email from one of my clients who also is on Comcast, and they're like, hey, we're having some really weird internet things. And so I started to look, and Comcast had some huge routing errors or, some sort of it might have been DNS. It was very strange because some websites would work rock solid and other ones would just do nothing at all.
Oh,
so I just my clients were having the same problems. Luckily, they have two internet connections, so we failed over to the other internet connection and they were able to get on with their day.
And is that problem ongoing?
It was down for about 45 minutes or an hour, and I down with quotation marks. It wasn't like completely down. Some things were working fine, other things weren't.
Selectively down.
Yeah. So it, and I've read a few other things saying that there's a large distributed denial of service attack for Azure and a few other things that are core services for the internet anymore.
Okay.
So it seems to have subsided for now. It was working fine all afternoon.
No, that's good news. If anybody had trouble with that earlier today, now you know exactly what was happening.
Yeah. If you want to know a little, or if you want to, I'd like to know what, you know, what you had. If anyone wants to call in 963-2976, talk about their experience with the quirky outage, because it was a weird deal because it wasn't all the way down. It wasn't like, oh, there's no internet at all. It's just like some things are kind of acting funky.
Anything we can feed to the conspiracy theorists? Were there certain commonalities about the sites that were down and the ones that were up?
Well, luckily the sites that I host at least were working locally, and they were also working in Denver, so
okay,
so that's good. But I'm not sure if it was related. I'd have to go and see what infrastructure each, you know, one of those websites were using, and to see, you know, if it was one of the, you know, like Amazon Web Services was having issues, or if it was Microsoft Azure, or you know, one of the other cloud services companies that was being attacked or having routing issues, or maybe it was something inside of Comcast as well.
So is Azure, that's the Microsoft cloud?
Yes.
Okay. Interesting. Yeah. I recently invested in a Surface Pro, and I'm still figuring it out. But Windows 10 it's pretty different.
Yeah, definitely. Takes a little getting used to.
Yeah. I'd say my biggest complaint would be there's like all these apps like Xbox,
mm-hmm.
stuff like that you can't really easily remove. Like you have to kind of get into the computer to remove it.
Yeah, I just sort of just ignore those and just let them sit back there. I mean, they do take up a little bit of space, but
mm-hmm.
I just got a text from Marty saying that they are now walking the bridge.
Oh, so. Can you see him on the Skype?
No, I can't see him on the YouTube stream yet.
Listeners at home, this is probably going to be a pretty beautiful thing to witness on Skype. So that's the CMC's live feed, or?
Yeah, so CMC is providing the feed through YouTube, and we're getting a call.
All right. We'll patch him through. Hello, you are on the air.
Hey there. Hey, Matt. This is Bill Shank calling. I am I have a computer question, and I'm driving down the road. I'm going to probably go into one of Verizon's notorious no phone zones here in a minute. But the question is, I have a Dell, you know, Inspiron laptop with Windows 10 on it, and it keeps trying to do both several Windows updates that always fail to update. And then there's a couple of Adobe Flash Player updates. It's always the same ones every time. Every day, it tries to load them at the end of the day. Next morning, it says it failed on all of them. It's been going on for a week.
Yeah. What do you use for your antivirus software?
AVG.
Okay.
I have the AVG paid version, the pro version.
All right. Well, the first thing I would try is turning off the live protection. So you log into, go into the AVG control panel, turn off the live protection, and then try to rerun the installations or rerun them manually. So you can do that by going to, and you said Windows 10, right? So you can go to the start bar or the start button, right. Go to settings, and then search for updates.
Update.
And then
right.
Run those and run those with the virus protection turned off. The other option is to try to run those updates by going into safe mode. And that one's a little different now. It's like it's F10, I think. Or you can, let's see here. If you Google like boot into safe mode, they have it a way where you can, somewhere in the settings, you can tell the computer on the next restart to reboot into safe mode, and so then run the updates there just to make sure that not, you know, there's no antivirus or anything blocking those updates.
Okay.
But that's usually what it is. It could be a few other things, but that's the first low-hanging fruit to try.
Right, because I tried just uninstalling Flash Player and reinstalling it, thinking it would be just fresh and new, but it still keeps trying to update regardless.
Yeah, and Flash Player updates very often anyway. Are you using Firefox or Chrome or?
Firefox.
Okay, yeah. So Firefox doesn't have a built-in version of Adobe Flash, so you have to run the one from Adobe.com.
Right. Okay. Well, I will give those a try.
Well, thank you. Thanks for the call. If you have any troubles, we'll be here next week.
Yeah.
Okay, and have a great bridge opening.
Yeah. I see people walking across it right now.
Oh,
awesome.
There's a lot of people. It's packed.
All right. Thanks a lot, you guys.
All right. Thank you.
That's really good.
All right. Bye.
All right.
All right. So what would you say? There's a few hundred at least.
Yeah, there's several hundred people walking across the bridge right now.
Log on to... That's on the CDOT website. CDOT.gov.
Yeah, I think it's probably available on cotrip.org as well.
You can see a steady stream of people moseying across our brand new bridge. We earned it.
Yeah, I was looking at the history of the old bridge, and it was a little interesting. I found an article on plannerweb.com that was published in 2014 about the history, and that bridge was built in 1953, and was expected to last 50 to 60 years. As originally a two-lane with sidewalks on both sides. And then in 1969, they removed both of the sidewalks and turned it into a four-lane, but the four-lane bridge was only 9 feet wide, and the new standard is 12 feet wide, so it's a...
It was about time.
It was, and then it goes on to say how it was structurally deficient and a bunch of other things.
Wow.
So this is a huge improvement. I'm looking forward to things getting back to normal.
Yeah, it'll be great to drive across it as early as tomorrow.
Yeah. You're listening to Geek Speak on KDNK, 963-2976.
We are here to answer any questions you might have.
Yeah, bridge questions, tech questions, printer questions, anything you like.
Personal questions. No. That's a different show.
Yeah.
And so I've got a personal question. How did you get into computers, Matt?
So when I was six, my dad was working at CMC. He was the assistant dean. And he purchased somewhere around 27 or 30 digital rainbow 100s, an old amber screen computer before pre-DOS computer. And so they were in various states of disrepair. So he taught me how to pull the chips. And so basically it was just, you know, kind of pull it out, put it in there, see if it boot up, pull it out, pull the next one in, and until you could max out the machine. And I've been hooked ever since.
And what kind of operating system do you use?
I use all of them. I mean, okay. So I have my primary machine right now is a Mac. I have a Windows 10 machine as a secondary machine. I have several Linux servers, a couple other Linux boxes, a few Raspberry Pis, and many other things.
And how do you feel about open source software?
It's my favorite. I'm really trying to have everything in that realm. So it's like, you know, I still have to have a Mac to, so I can be familiar with the current Mac operating system. I have to have a Windows computer to be current with the, you know, with Windows. And but I do really enjoy using Linux. It's much cleaner, and it's an open source as well, so, or part of the open source community. So there's so many great options there anymore. If you want to have something that's similar to Mac, you can load a KDE desktop on your machine. If you want to have something similar to Windows, you can have a Gnome. Or if you have a really old computer, you can do something that's really lightweight, similar to maybe something like XP, and those are, it's like XFCE or LXCM or whatever it is.
Cool.
So, and the nice thing about that is you can take a really old computer and have it run reasonably well and with modern software.
And do you do any coding?
I do web development, so I have a friend who does full-time programming, but they're... you know, so he's like, well, it's not really programming, but it's like, you know, you still, if it doesn't have variables, you're not saying it's programming. So I'm mostly front end and like database manipulation.
Okay.
That's cool. when I'm wearing that hat among many others.
Yeah, I think one thing that I really like about open source, not that I'm contributing, but the fact that there's all these people who are playing with the code and improving it and patching it, and it's very democratic.
Yeah. Well, it's a, so like, what is it? Debian is a meritocracy. And so you can think of it as four circles. So you have the, you know, people on the outside circle that are using it and, you know, maybe finding bugs. And then you have the ones that are finding the bugs, trying to fix them, handing that off to the more trusted people towards the center of the circle. Mm-hmm. And so you end up with people who know what they're doing in the middle of the democratic system.
Okay. Right. It's not just like everybody's messing with the code.
Right. And so and that does happen from time to time. Somebody might just, you know, have a bug, fix it, hand it off to the developer and said, hey, I found this bug. Here's the code. And the developer might just say, okay, I'm going to take that and, you know, plug that in where it needs to go because it's good enough.
Mm-hmm.
So very it just cool. Depends on the project.
Cool. Mm. If you have any questions, the number to call is 963-2976.
Yeah, we haven't had a live report from Louie or Marty yet. I'm kind of surprised. Wow, there's still a lot of people just marching across the bridge.
The worst tragedy. Don't even want to say it. Can you imagine, though? The bridge just couldn't hold out. So we got four lanes now, two in each direction, up to regulation. 12 feet each.
Have you heard anything new about whether they're going to do two lanes, three lanes alternating, or all four lanes at this point? Because I know that's been talked about over the last couple of weeks. I don't know where they got to on all that.
Yeah, I believe that they are going to open it not with all four lanes, but they'll probably do two lanes alternating beginning tomorrow. But actually, who knows? It looks like it's completely ready for that kind of traffic.
And the feed's going in and out. I wonder if there's a whole bunch of people...
Logged on
watching it.
It's possible.
So that's definitely cool. And I saw that there's a few animations on how the traffic's supposed to flow and all that. It looks like it's going to work really well.
Mm-hmm.
Once the roundabout's a little odd to me, but getting on and off the interstate, and that's really what that bridge is for, is looks like it's really very optimized for that to me.
Uh-huh. Yeah, the way it curves right out from the interstate.
All right. So, Louie, give us a call. 963-2976.
Waiting to hear from you, Marty.
Yeah. So let's see here. What else we got?
I really like the graphic of Sopris that you have on your business card.
Thank you. Yeah, well, a local artist put that together for me. She went out and took pictures of Sopris for several months in the spring until she got one she really liked, and then vectorized in an artistic way, vectorized Sopris.
So to vectorize would be to just really simplify everything into a few colors?
Not necessarily, but in this case, yes. Yeah. So that image I could blow up to the size of a, you know, put it on the side of a building, and it would still look the same as it does on the card, or I could make it really tiny and it would look the same.
Okay.
And so vector is basically a mathematical formula that describes the curves or the straight lines and in relation to each other.
So instead of pixels.
Right, which is called raster.
Okay.
So that's a vector diagram. So you can, and we're starting to use those more in web development, which is really awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Cause you can, and they're much more space efficient, than a raster image. Cause you're, you know, storing these small, basically equations of the image, and you can actually read through the equations and modify them, as code if you wanted to, as opposed to using a tool like, Inkscape or, not InDesign. There's an Adobe one that does vector graphics as well. I can't remember what it is off the top of my head.
Wow. And so do you do much like artwork in computers?
A little. I do really small, like just little pieces of the website. So like if I need a something to, you know, as a banner or something to do as a shadow, just little accent pieces. So I really don't do much more than that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, one of my inspirations in deciding to get a Surface Pro was to use it as a tablet for drawing different programs. But I'm so used to drawing, you know, manually, that it's a lot to get used to.
Does the Surface Pro allow you to have pressure sensitive writing, so you can, you know, so the software knows how hard you're pushing on the screen, and it'll do it harder as you.
Yeah, it does. Sure. Yeah.
Excellent.
Mm-hmm. It's a really great touchscreen, which I haven't been using as much as I'd ought to be. Yeah, really need to just put in the time and practice and learn how to draw on a computer.
All right.
Yeah.
963-2976, call in with your questions.
Here's one right now.
Awesome.
Hello, you're on the air.
Hi, this is Dan.
Hey, Dan.
I'm not computer savvy at all, so I don't know if this will work.
You know. All right, well, just do your best.
I just want to let you know. So a friend of mine who does computers, he put the Ubuntu system into my personal computer.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. But he said that it was not going to be real compatible with iTunes. Do you guys know anything about that?
What are you going to use iTunes for?
Well, I want to, when I had Microsoft, I was able to, you know, plug my phone in, my iPhone, or maybe it's the iPhone. I was able to plug my iPhone in and it would just be compatible, but evidently this particular system is not compatible with my iPhone. I don't know if that makes sense or not.
Sure. So Ubuntu is an operating system like OS, like you know, Mac OS or Microsoft Windows, and so I'm gonna have to do a little looking as to how to connect a iPhone to a Ubuntu device, which is a Linux distribution. So.
Right.
And so Linux has a whole like a whole other ecosystem of software on it. So. There's like Clementine and Songbird and VLC. There's a bunch of other media players that you can use. That's why I was asking how are you using your iPhone with your computer? Are you using it to manage your media library? Are you just using it for backup or a combination?
Yeah, and sometimes I don't. I'm trying to get, you know, pictures on there, and sometimes it seems. I think it worked once, and I'm having trouble with that as well. You know, just getting pictures on there. It has worked. I just need to know.
Okay. Do you know what version of Ubuntu he put on there, or her?
Oh, no. Probably a few, just probably 3 or 4 years old.
Okay.
Sure.
Yeah. So that might be like, do you remember it saying anything like maybe 1404 LTS or 1510? Like right when it boots up, it may say that for a few seconds before, like there's a little loading screen that says Ubuntu, and then it'll say, you know, it'll say something.
Yeah, I mean, I can pull up the administration or...
Yeah, I don't use Ubuntu very heavily. It's one of the it's a great starting point for you know, getting your feet wet in the Linux but
yeah.
You know, I'd have to see what version it is. I'm going to have to do a little bit of research on how to you know, what's a modern way to connect your iPhone to Ubuntu. It looks like there it can be done. I'm just trying to see if there's a an easy way, cuz you might be able to just go into the package manager and download a piece of software to take care of that for you, just not finding it immediately.
Actually, I'm okay with having one of you guys come over sometime. Why don't you just maybe give me your number and I'll just hire you for an hour or something.
All right. Best number to reach me at is 704-6725. And I'll do a little bit of research to see what see if there's an easy way to connect your iPhone to an Ubuntu install.
Yeah, that would be great. It's a lot of it's music, just getting, you know, music. Like if I download a CD or something, I want it to just go right onto my iPhone.
All right, yeah, I'll have to do a little bit of research on that one. And do you know what type of iPhone you have?
Yeah, it's a 5.
Okay, 5 or 5S?
5S.
All right. I'll put that in my notes, and I'll take a look at how to do that.
Yeah. Yeah, that'd be great.
All right. Thanks for the call.
Thank you.
I'll look
Thank
that up,
so
and
much.
We'll be in touch.
And is this Matt?
Yes,
or?
This is Matt.
Yeah. Okay. All right, Matt.
Yeah. Awesome.
Dan Rosenthal. Okay.
All right. I'll talk to you soon, Dan.
Okay. Thank you. Bye.
Thanks,
Bye.
Dan.
Have a few more minutes here, 963-2976. Let's see what...
Running out of time. Louis, where you at?
All right, looks like they're finishing up the walk. I see some sort of law enforcement vehicle kind of towards the end and some... Oh, all right.
We got another call. Hello.
Hey, what do you guys know about the error code 403 forbidden?
All right, so that's one of the standard HTTP or error codes. So like one you might run into very often, more often would be like 404. But that's a not found. So like if you had a file that doesn't exist on the server, it'll return a 404. Now 403 is forbidden, which means that the file exists, but as a anonymous user of that web server. You're not allowed to view that file, or that file has the wrong permissions to allow you to access it through the web server.
So is this something that the web server decides, or the end user, or the site I'm trying to reach, or so, possibly the fact it's in Eastern Europe, or how does this all come together?
So it's how the server is configured on that end. So let's say there's a text file you're trying to access, and the permissions on the server say that the server software doesn't have access to it. The server will say, hey, the file's there, but I can't access it. So the only other possibility, and usually it'll prompt you for this, but like if there's a way to access, you can password protect a file, on many web servers, so there's a little list of username and passwords, so it would come up and say, hey, what's the username and password? And if you don't have that, then it would, and you like click cancel or type in the wrong password a few times, it would come back and say forbidden.
Okay.
So you'd have to, the best thing to do would be to contact the owner of that server and say, hey, I can't get to that file.
Okay. I mean, we're talking about the owner of the destination server or my Google account?
The destination. Now is.
Oh.
So yeah, if it's on like if it was on my website like rfhelpdesk.net, you'd contact me. If you were, you know, whoever is on the other end of that, if you know how to contact them, you know, like send a, if you got that link in an email or something like that, they need to update their settings.
Okay, none of which is the case. So I browsed around the internet for ways to get around the 403 forbidden, and they all seem kind of, no two were the same suggestion.
No, there's
so
a...
Am I just wasting my time and should just forget that link and forget it, or...
Yeah, unless you can contact the person who sent you that link and fix it, but we're out of time for this evening.
All right. Thanks, Matt.
Sure.
Well, thank you so much for joining us for GeekSpeak. It's been great spending some time with you, Matt.
Thank you. I appreciate you hosting.
Too bad we didn't get any calls in from the bridge, but...
That's all right.
Alas.
You've been listening to GeekSpeak on KDNK. I'm your host, Matt McBrayer. Have a great week, everyone.